This call is being recorded.
I'd like to welcome you to our May conference call. My name is Jim Shapiro, and with me is Stephen Screen.
Hi, everybody.
We are co-founders of the Better Fundraising Co., and it's our honor to be with you on this call hosting this important topic. Before we dig into how to raise more money than you expect at fiscal year end, Stephen and I really want you to know how much we appreciate you and the work that you do to make the world a better place. We know as a fundraiser, without you, the work of your organization would definitely slow down and potentially not even exist. So thanks for doing the work that you do. We're honored that you give us a little of your time and a little of your training budget to be a part of this phone call. On today's call, we're going to coach you through how to raise money at fiscal year end. We're going to talk to you about why it works, about how to do it in the mail, and how to do it online. We're going to break down those elements for you. As always, we have a lot of ground to cover, but before we do, just know that this call cannot hold all of our thinking. And so we've put a lot of information on the blog this month. We've been talking and blogging about it online. You'll find more helpful content and more information at betterfundraising.com. Well, Stephen, let's get right to this topic of fiscal year-end fundraising.
Excellent. Thank you, Jim. And for those of you who have been on any of our calls before, you know that we like to start out with a couple big ideas that we think are important, handle those big ideas, talk about them for a second, and then get into tactical advice you can use to go start raising more money. And one sort of note before we begin, this call assumes that your fiscal year does not end on December 31st. In other words, that your fiscal year end and calendar year end are not the same. Instead, we're assuming that your fiscal year ends June 30, August 30, or September 30. Those are the most common other endings for nonprofit fiscal years, and they're all big fundraising opportunities for you. So I'm going to assume that if you're with us today, if you're listening, your fiscal year ends at the end of June, August, or September, and really any time other than December 31st. And everything I'm about to share applies to all of those dates. So the first big idea I want to share with you is this, and that is the fact that fiscal year fundraising works so well doesn't really make sense on the surface. Almost no one believes that fiscal year end fundraising is going to work that well for their organization. I mean, no one, from the biggest organizations to the smallest, and it doesn't seem like it would make sense that it would work. And I think that's a reasonable thing to think, because after all, which of your donors is out there thinking about when your fiscal year ends and what happens because of that? and again, right, on the surface, who would think that an appeal about the end of your budgeting cycle would motivate a donor to give? It's super organizational-centric. It's apparently not donor-centric at all on the surface, and it goes against basically everything Jim and I teach. But it works. And so fundraising for fiscal year end works great for our clients and lots of other organizations, year after year after year, to my surprise, but it keeps on working. The fiscal year-end letter is one of the best-performing letters of the year. The emails are often the second-best-performing emails of the year, behind only your December year-end emails. And so I'm telling you this because I really want you to sort of own the idea that if your organization's fiscal year ends on June 30th or any of the other dates we talked about, you have a great fundraising opportunity that most likely you're not taking advantage of enough. This is the proverbial low-hanging fruit for you, and we're going to show you how to grab it. So let's talk about the second big idea is, why does this work? We know that it works from doing hundreds of fiscal year-end appeal letters and emails. Excuse me, let's talk about why just for a second. There are two main reasons why that we've identified. Number one is there's a simple, powerful problem that the donor can help solve. That problem is usually that a budget cycle is coming to an end, or that we are a little short at the end of a budgeting cycle. And that's happened to all of us. And so it means that your donor understands and can feel the problem on her own. And that right there makes her more likely to respond. And then number two, the second reason these things work is because there's such a clear deadline. We know from experience, for instance, year-end fundraising, that having a clear deadline is magic for getting motivating donors to take action. So a lot of people, when they hear us talk and teach about this, a lot of clients say, really? That's it? Because it feels too simple, and I think the same thing, and every year I'm sort of surprised, but it works like crazy every year. The power of a deadline and the power of a simple, solvable problem work again and again and again. And so it works so well that we recommend this to every organization we work with whose fiscal year doesn't align with the calendar year end.
Yeah, Stephen, that's good. It's simple, and some people do call us crazy, but let me jump in here just for a minute and say that this fundraising around fiscal year end works really well for some majors, too. Didn't say all, but some of them. It's because this is a great opportunity, really, to secure that second gift from any major who is close to your organization. They know you. They know what's going on. They understand budgets. They understand budget cycles. They're probably managing their own business. They're obviously managing their own finances. They understand fiscal years. And like everything you just said, it's a clear problem and an offer which a lot of donors love to give to.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good highlight into major donor fundraising and getting second gifts from some majors. And one thing that sort of final thing we want to mention here before digging into this, and that's some organizations are really shy or scared of doing fiscal year and fundraising. The message that the fiscal year is ending, and occasionally that the we are a little short or there is a shortfall, is really hard for some internal audiences to be comfortable with. And by internal audiences, I mean staff, leadership, board members. This is a common piece of feedback we get. We get it from relief and development organizations. We get it from schools, educations, universities, basically from everybody. And it's a common worry. It's why so few organizations do this. But let me share with you that you don't have to worry about that. And there are two main reasons. Number one is the difference between internal audiences and external audiences. To internal audiences, when you say, hey, we're a little short at the end of our fiscal year, the internal audience filters, brings a lot of stuff into the conversation that shouldn't be in the conversation, or maybe better put, isn't part of the conversation for the donor or for external audiences. So internal audiences are going to say, oh gosh, this sounds like we don't know what we're doing. It sounds like we don't manage our money well. It sounds like we're not good planners. Those are things we hear often from internal audiences when we talk about raising money at fiscal year end. But external audiences don't have those concerns. The general narrative about what happens when an external audience receives a fiscal year-end message is, oh, wow, they happen to be a little short right now. I can help them with a gift today. It really is that simple. So you don't have to, you just don't have to worry about this. I know you have internal audiences that are worried, but your donors will not worry about it. I'll tell you why right now.
Yeah, well, and just to jump in there, Stephen, just with an example of a lot of times this fiscal year-end shortfall is not our fault. It's not a management issue.
Right.
We had a client a year or so ago that had a large grant that did not come through. By no fault of their own, they were short $100,000. So I just wanted to echo this idea that some of the internal audience, most likely your board, maybe some of your executive team, are going to feel like it's a reflection of them as managers. But also there's times where it's not. It's really an external issue or funding shortfall that's really by no fault of their own.
Yeah, that's right. And the letter I'm going to share with you later today, which hopefully you have the PDF of, that's from an educational institution that was super nervous about sending it out, and it worked like crazy. So we'll talk about that in a second, but I wanted to talk to you about the second reason. Enough organizations are scared of fiscal year end fundraising that years and years ago we did a test where we looked at all the we basically took half an organization's donors and sent them a fiscal year-end shortfall letter, and half the organization's donors did not get the letter because the organization was fearful. They said, gosh, if we go out and we say we have a shortfall, people are going to think less of us, and even if they give now, they are going to give less later. That was the theory. So we took their donors, we split them into two groups, and we checked the giving behavior of the donors after the fiscal year-end letter for the following year. And there was no difference. There was no difference. So we know that fiscal year-end works both in the short term, because you'll raise money if you do it, and it works in the long term in that there is no negative effect. There's no long-term negative effect. So if anybody out there has leadership or some sort of audience, you can tell them that Better Fundraising did some testing, and this wasn't done just once, by the way. It was done multiple times for multiple organizations to show them that there are no long-term negative effects to fiscal year-end fundraising, even if you have a shortfall, even if you do it every single year.
Yep. Stephen, I'd be happy if you all get any kind of pushback, have your CEO call me. Have your board chair give me a call or contact me. We're happy to have this conversation because we believe in it so much. We believe that fiscal year-end fundraising is so important and can be done well that we're happy to help you kind of convince or educate your internal audience as to why and or how it's going to work.
Yeah.
Stephen, we're going to get into the tactics, but before we do, I just want to remind people you can email me, jim@betterfundraising.com. We'll be answering questions both throughout this call and at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so we know this works. We know there's no long-term negative effect. That there's some sort of bogeyman that people are scared about. They do not need to worry about that. And by the way, the final tactical tip on that is, if you have a board member or a staff member who really is worried about how this letter is going to be perceived, don't send this letter to them. Or don't send the emails to them, and just keep them out of the loop, right? They're in the organization, they're going to hear about it, but you just don't have to send it to them. Okay, those are the big ideas. Let's get into tactics. What we're going to try to do here is basically give you everything you need to this fiscal year end, get out a letter and get out some emails to raise as much money as you can. And so we're going to talk about exactly what you should do to put this message in front of your donors and raise more money. So here it is in a nutshell. You want to run a fiscal year-end campaign, and you want to do it just like a well-run year-end campaign. So here's a brief outline of what to do. It's probably good to take some notes here, though we'll send you a recording of this call tomorrow. But here are the specifics. First, you want to send a letter to your donors on or before June 1st. And again, we're going to walk through the sample letter that we sent you in just a few minutes. Number two, you want to send an email to your list on June 5th that says the same thing the letter said. By the way, there's no magic there about June 5th. What we're trying to do is have the email land in homes the same day your appeal letter lands in homes. You want your email message to be the same message that arrives in the inbox the same day your letter arrives in their mailbox. So if you send it a couple days before June 1st, send your email a couple days before. If you send your letter June 5th, send your email on June 8th or something, presuming you have a local audience. You want to send it later if you're sending mail all over the country. So in that email, that email that follows the letter, you want to use the same language, say the same things, even use some of the same sentences and phrases and paragraphs. You're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. You're trying to repeat the same powerful message that's in the letter. I want to make that clear. You're trying to repeat what's in the letter so that the donor reads it two times, not reads two different things one time, because that is proven to get fewer people to respond. Okay, so that's the first part of your campaign, a letter, snail mail, and then an email that chases that. Then the second part of your campaign is a string of emails at the end of the month. You want to send your first email on Thursday the 28th, a second email on Friday the 29th, and a final email on Saturday the 30th. So those are three emails, and they're just like year-end emails, in that they're all about the deadline, all about the problem. And again, I keep saying this, but we'll go through the letter in a bit, and you'll see the types of language and phrases to use. And you want to use those same things in those emails. Then, on Monday the 2nd of July, the month after your fiscal year end, you want to send a thank you letter and a receipt to everyone who gave a gift to the letter and the emails.
Stephen, this is really a detailed plan. You have dates, you have exact times you want to send them. I'm thinking, though, as I'm maybe sitting in the chair of someone on the call, June 1st is like, you know, two, 3 days down the pipe here. It's only a few days away.
Yep.
In fact, we brought on a new client of ours under our instant appeal and reports service, where we create content for clients. And they just brought us on. And there was no way we're going to be able to get that appeal letter out by June 1st.
Yep.
I'm assuming I know the answer to this, but I want to hear it from you. Is it okay to send the letter out on June 10th, June 8th? Like,
yeah.
Is there a way to adjust this a little bit here, even though we're we're towards the end of the fiscal year?
I mean, I would send it out as late as June 15th. But I, the earlier you send it, the more money you'll raise. So we realize this call is coming at the end of May, and so that shortens the window for some people. But send it out as soon as you can. I don't think I'd send it later than June 15th or maybe June 20th, the absolute latest.
Great. Well, that gives us about 3 weeks, if needed, you know, that full timeline. But I hear you loud and clear. Get it out as soon as you can.
Yeah.
And then follow this rhythm. And again, some of you have fiscal years that end in September and different times. So
that's right. It's
more about the rhythm. But for those of you that do have a June fiscal year end, I just wanted you to hear that. It's okay if you send it out a day or two late.
Yep. Great. Okay. So that's the general outline. You're going to do a mail with an email follow-up. Then you're going to do two or three emails at the end of the month. And you want to run this like a year-end fundraising campaign. So if you have any fundraising materials, by the way, like a design letter or an email that you've used at year end, you can take those and just switch out the copy to be about fiscal year end instead of being about calendar year end. The design doesn't need to be different. If you did a Christmas theme design, it probably should not have holly berries and jingle bells and Christmas kitsch. But you can use the same design. So, again, you don't have to reinvent the wheel here. That's something we see again and again where nonprofits, we know you're busy. This is a place you can save time. Use design that you have done before. So, now what I'd love for you to do is take out the letter, the sample letter that we sent, and I want to walk you through it and show you a handful of things.
If by chance you registered for this call late and didn't receive the letter for whatever reason, just know we'll send it out again when we hopefully we'll send it out again here at post call, and you can listen to the section of the call and look through the letter when you do so.
Yep. Okay. So this letter was sent out on legal paper, legal size sheet. The top quarter of the sheet was the reply card. By the way, this is for a this letter was written for an educational institution, a college. Like I mentioned earlier, the college was nervous about doing this, and it worked like crazy. The letter has been anonymized so that you can't tell what organization it was for, even. But the bones of the letter remain, and I'm here to tell you that. The format doesn't matter so much, but you can copy this thing, make it your own. In other words, insert your organization's mission in there and maybe some of the phrases that you normally use. But borrow liberally from this letter. Okay, so the very top piece is the reply device. It is the reply card that a person would perf or cut off and send back with their gift. You'll notice right at the top that it says my fiscal year end gift, and then executive director name or president of the college name in this case. I want to help overcome the current financial shortfall and end sample organization's fiscal year in great shape. Enclosed is my gift of, and then we lasered in some custom gift asks. That's something I hope you can do. Basically, those gift asks are based on how much the donor gave last time, so they're not pre-populated with amounts that try to work for everybody and therefore work for almost nobody. By the way, if you're interested in learning how to do those lasered, customized gift ask amounts, get in touch. Anyway, we've got the big My Fiscal Year End Gift, and then you see that sort of in a stamp effect that says fiscal year ends June 30th of 18. You see the donor's name and address down on the lower left, and then a donor ID in the lower right. That's so that when the reply card comes in, well, it's for two reasons. One, it removes a step that the donor would have to write their own information. And number two, it makes it super easy for the person or company processing the gift to make sure that it gets processed correctly. So there's the RD up at the top of the letter, and then we move down into the letter. And dear Mr. and Mrs. McKinsey will say, I'm looking for a hero, and I think that may be you. I'll explain. Sample Org's fiscal year ends on June 30. To meet our goal and end the year on target, we need to raise $300,000 by June 30, 2018. Notice how quickly this letter gets to the point. It's super clear, too. There's sort of no comments about the weather, no comments about the health of the institution, no sort of equivocating about what's going on. It just says, I need someone who can make a difference. You, donor, are that difference, and here's what we need. The letter goes on to say, that's a lot of money, but together we can raise it, which is why I need a hero like you. I'm not asking you to do anything dramatic, just a donation. Maybe, again, these would be lasered amounts based on how much the donor had given last time. So say the donor had given $150 last time. These amounts would be, this might say, maybe $150, $225, or even $300. Any amount that makes sense for you, because that's how we'll meet this challenge. Will you send a gift today? So right there is the whole letter. We've told the donor that she's needed. We've told the donor what's going on. We've asked the donor to make a gift. And so the donor literally does not have to read anything else to know what is going on and what we've asked of her. And so as you scan through the rest of the letter, you'll see that, the very next paragraph, your gift will help raise, and then we talked about what this college did, the next generation of student leaders or whatever it is, if you work in an educational institution, whatever it is, what phrase you would put there. Or say your relief and development. Your gift will help poor children in Africa get fed and overcome poverty. Or you'll help provide programming to people who want to see it. Whatever it is, there's your short sentence of the outcomes that your organization creates. And then take a look at the rest of the letter. It says things like, let me assure you, we're well along the path to long-term financial health. In fact, we're on more solid footing day by day, but we're about to close the books on this fiscal year, and we need to end the year strong. That end the year strong is a really important phrase, because even if you don't have a shortfall, which is fine, you can still talk about the need to end the fiscal year strong so that next year you can start off on a good foot. That is a great positioning to help your donors see that the need that you have right now for funds is real and important. So if you go ahead and turn over to the back of the letter, you'll see the at the top is the back of the reply card, the reply device, the normal stuff that you would see. And then the rest of the letter is basically kind of repeating, talking to the donor, giving credit to the donor for what she's done before. In other words, second to the top paragraph, our organization wouldn't be around if it wasn't for the generosity of people like you. Your donation before June 30th means we can keep going full speed ahead. Blah, blah, blah. Then we got the PS at the end, which again summarizes the whole thing. Our fiscal year ends on June 30th. That's almost upon us. Please rush your gift to work by that date. Pretty simple letter, right? It's pretty repetitive. There's a lot of talk about the deadline. There are multiple requests to send in a gift. And the reason it's repetitive is because we know that most donors won't read the whole letter. It's really important to remember that. I'll say it again. Most donors won't read the whole letter. That's why good direct mail is repetitive. That's why you want to take the main phrases and repeat them a couple of times.
Stephen, I was sitting here wanting to make a comment about the repetitive nature of this letter, and you said it. And I wanted to make the comment because at least a half dozen times last week, I had a client or someone that we're working with ask about their appeal letters as to why we're repeating. Mm-hmm. And most of those folks have what we call a higher organizational IQ. They know a lot about the organization. They want a letter to be, you know, proper form and proper function, and all it wants to look good. And I just had to keep hitting home the fact people are not reading these things. In most cases, they're scanning them. We need to repeat the key elements so we can capture their attention and we can get them to respond.
Yep. The biggest thing, I always say this and I get laughs, but the biggest mistake most nonprofits make with their letters is and their emails is that they assume they're going to be read. And that's just not the case. Mm-hmm. Donors are moving fast. If you look at any of the eye tracking studies, you'll see how little donors actually read. They're scanning, they're jumping around, and that's why good direct mail is A, really repetitive, because you don't know where they're going to land. Well, you sort of know. That's why you put things in the PS and you put things in the first couple paragraphs. Anyway, it's repetitive because you want to make sure your donor gets the main message you're trying to send. And we know that repetition is good, right? If you watch any TV program, you're liable to see the same commercial two or three times. That's because that advertiser knows that not everybody gets the message the very first time they see or hear it. So it needs to be repeated.
Yeah, Stephen, this is really good. Again, I'm always trying to put myself in the shoes of our listener, you know, these folks that are so busy and have so much going on. You all listening in should know Stephen won an award a few years back for the best appeal package in the country. He wrote it and won an award. So you're listening to an expert that understands direct mail, not just his opinion, not just his theory, but tested, proven, practice and results. So Stephen, if you can maybe just summarize why this letter was successful. What are the kind of key elements as you took us into the basic function here, but now kind of break it down for us. What were some of the key elements that really made this letter successful?
Yep. So number one, the directness. The letter gets to the point really, really quickly. It assumes that the donor is not going to read the whole thing. Number two, the bold language to give a gift today. This is super vital. You don't want to ask for consideration. You don't want to ask for support. You don't want to ask for partnership. You want to ask them to give you a gift today. Number three is the repetitiveness. I'm repeating myself, but that's fine. This is important. Most donors won't read the whole letter, so you really want to repeat the most important ideas, right? You'll see it's like five or six mentions of the deadline in the letter. That's a really big deal, and it's done on purpose because we found that the more we mentioned the deadline, the more people tend to give. So number four is the readability. This letter is really easy to read, especially for an older donor. So it's in an old timey font. I think this is Times New Roman. If you printed this out on regular paper, the font looks a little smaller than normal. But if you printed it out on a normal legal size sheet, it would be plenty big for you to read. You want to make it easy to read. Number five is don't be worried if a letter like this makes your organization sound a little different than you normally do. In all of our testing, the holiday and year-end and fiscal year-end letters that work best are much more concerned with getting to the point quickly and clearly than they are in, quote, sounding like us.
Stephen, for me, the ones that I think I get a lot of pushback on, or at least makes people feel most uncomfortable, is the directness and the bold nature of these letters. But they have to be, because, again, people aren't reading, they're scanning. We need to be direct. In fundraising, we need to call people to action for a very specific thing, for a very specific reason.
Yep.
These letters aren't written where the first couple paragraphs are, you know, it's 75 degrees in Seattle and it's sunny outside and goes on and on and on. We get right to the point.
That's the truth. That is just the way the mail works. And wanting to sound like us is a misapplication of an idea that does not apply in the mail.
Yep.
I will say that there are parts of the letter where you can sound like you, but do it in the parts where the donor might be continuing to read, not the parts that she's scanning through. Because in those parts, you will raise more money if you are direct and if you're to the point. And by the way, I mean, we see this feedback all the time from executive directors or someone who says, I want it to sound like me. It's got to sound like me. And I'm just telling you from, I don't have this, but there are literally 60 years of direct response fundraising in the mail testing that say that sounding like you is not of value to all your donors. Now, if you're talking to a major donor, you should sound more like you. But really, your goal in the mail is to sound like you getting to the point faster than you ever have before, right? It's not. Sounding like yourself for an executive director, president, whatever, that's not a value you want to hold dear. You want to hold clarity and get to the point fast.
And Stephen, usually when we hear those comments from a CEO or executive director, it is because they are thinking of that one major donor or the board member that they're close to or someone who they have a close friendship with. That's their context. That's the framework they're working from. And we just need to help you and the organization, listeners, to really shift your thinking to the mass, the majority of your audience. This is who we're talking to right now.
Yeah. So when you're talking to all your donors at once, follow these principles that we're talking about. I think they're all pretty good principles, but
yep, it's really good principles. Stephen, this is actually a good time. I think we have a question that came in that's actually pertinent to what we're talking about. I think we're going to shift gears in just a second. I know you have a couple more thoughts as well.
Yeah.
But if I could jump in here, the question is where to put the reply coupon or the reply device.
Mm-hmm.
Do they build it into the letter? Do they put it at the top, put it at the bottom? What's the best practice there for the reply device?
In this case, if you're going to build it in the letter, put it at the top of the letter and make sure that headline is super clear, my fiscal year-end gift today, or my gift to end the shortfall, something like that. Build it at the top. If it's not built into the letter, then just have it be a separate piece of paper. If this is dangerous waters, but please, please, please don't use one of the envelopes that already has all the information and gift asks printed on it. Using those envelopes saves you a little bit of money and loses you lots of money because it's not personalized. What you want to be doing is you want to have a separate reply card. You want the headline on the reply card to match exactly what the letter is talking about. Then it looks like, oh, this reply card goes with this letter. They really need my help. As opposed to, oh, these are the envelopes that they send with everything, and I have to fill out my name. I have to pick my gift ask amount. That tactic raises you less money.
That's good.
So,
Stephen, I know we're going to transition here to email in just a second. Are there any other final thoughts that you have on the direct mail?
Yep. Yeah. So just a couple really, really quick things. Always remember that your donors are in a hurry, so get to the point quickly. Your donors will reward you for making good use of their time. And then number two in this letter, don't talk about how your organization does what it does. Talk to your donors about the people who need to help, whoever your beneficiaries are, and how the donor's gift will help them. So in the case of this letter, we talked about the young people who were in the school, and we talked about how those young people were going to be better and culture was going to be better and stronger because of the donor's gift. We didn't talk about how strong the school was or how great the classes were or any of the process stuff. We talked about the beneficiaries and the outcomes.
Stephen, I know we're going to email next, so thank you for that.
Yeah.
There's a question actually in the inbox. Why are we talking about direct mail first and not email or online funding, fundraising?
Because generally speaking, direct mail is going to raise way more money than email.
Hang on. It's 2018. It's going to raise more money than email?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, this is something we get all the time, but the really good statistic to know here is the Blackbaud statistic from the company that does Razor's Edge and a host of other products. But as of 2015, 93.7% of all gifts of income from individuals to nonprofits were given offline. So let me say that again because I didn't do a really good job. 93.7% of all revenue to nonprofits came in offline.
From individuals.
Yes. So we're not talking corporate grants, we're not talking foundations, we're talking about individual donors. So if you have a choice between sending one letter out to your mail file or one email out, I would send a letter every single time and twice on Sundays. It's so much better. Should you, are more and more people using email? Yes. Is it becoming a bigger and bigger part of the fundraising principle? The whole ecosystem, yes, but mail wins by a lot.
Amazing. Statistics, right? It's statistics. It's not our opinion, not two guys in Seattle talking about direct mail.
That's right.
Data-driven, so it's important. So thank you. That was a great question. And yes, in 2018, statistically, direct mail still wins. That's where most of your revenue from individuals will be coming. And we should be doing a great job in the email. I mean, email is important. We all are accessing our couple hundred emails every day in our inbox. Stephen, let's then shift gears from the hard copy to the email version of the appeal.
Yep, that's right. Okay, so the first email, we're talking about that email that goes on or about June 5th, the one that you're trying to have land in the donor's inbox on the same day that your letter lands in their mailbox. That email should basically be a carbon copy of the letter. have it say the same thing using the same headlines, the same phrasing, the same calls to action as the letter. You want it to seem, I know this is crazy, because we have this filter that gets run in nonprofits. It's like, oh, well, we need to reinvent the wheel. We got to sound different. That's not what you're trying to do here. You're trying to sound exactly the same so that it looks like you know what you're doing and you're on message the whole time. So that's the email that you want to send. That email will work pretty well. Now we're going to talk about the two or three email string that you're going to send at the end of the month, and this is where you see your biggest online fundraising wins. So you want to treat these just the same way you treat your email string at the end of the year. The first email you send at the end of the month should be basically the same as the one you sent earlier in the month. It's longer. It's using the same phrases and headlines and everything. It's basically a version. My general rule of thumb here is it's the letter cut down by about a third. That's your first email. Then your second email, this is the one that ideally goes on if your fiscal year ends in June, that goes about the 29th, should be a slightly shorter version of the same thing. Basically, what you're doing here is you're just trimming the fat. You're taking out everything that isn't a call to action, that isn't speaking directly to the donor, that isn't telling her about the deadline and what her gift is going to do multiple times about the deadline. And then finally, your third and final email goes on the morning of the 30th. That should be a still shorter version. So now you're talking about something that's maybe half the length of your letter, maybe even shorter. You're highly emphasizing the deadline and asking people to give a gift by midnight tonight. So in those last three emails, the main thing you want to be varying is how much time is left before a donor gives a gift. So on the email on the 28th, you're saying just 2 days left to give a gift. On the email on the 29th, you're saying one more day to give a gift. And on your email on the 30th, you're saying just hours left to give a gift. Now, if your email program is sophisticated, you can to avoid a complaint or two, you cannot send emails 2 and 3 to people who give to email 1 or to who gave to the letter earlier in the month. But for the most part, don't worry about that. Another way to get around that same issue is to, in emails 2 and 3, insert a sentence that says, if you have already given a fiscal year-end gift, thank you so much. If you haven't, there are just hours left to give. The basic thing is to acknowledge it, and then very, very quickly, immediately pivot right back to calls to action. And I know this seems bold. I know this seems overly direct, but it works like crazy. And there are no, and again, there are no long-term, there are no negative side effects. Your donors appreciate the directness. Let me say that again. Your donors appreciate the directness. So the trick here is you're thinking about all these emails and the letter is you're sending the same message in every email. Part of what works here is the repetition of that same message. That repetition helps drive it home that there really is a need, that there is a real deadline, and those things, a real need with a real deadline, will cause your donors to take action. Okay, next tactical step here. Every link in every email should go directly to your giving page. Don't send them to your homepage. Send them directly to the page where they can start filling out the form with their giving information. So, and ideally, that your giving page has updated copy at the top that mentions that the fiscal year-end campaign is going on and mentions the important deadline of midnight on the 30th. Two quick things to mention here. In a perfect world, if you can create a customized giving page just for this campaign, do it. And so that way your giving page is only talking about fiscal year end and it's not talking about other stuff. If you do that, it really depends on how many people you're going to be driving to the page. But if it's a customized giving page, you will raise more money than if it's a generalized giving page, the same one that everybody goes to all the time. That page won't convert as many people because it'll look general as opposed to looking like a fiscal year-end campaign. So the final thing to mention here is that, this is silly and it's true. you may have noticed that when we, a handful of times in the letter and on this call, we talk about midnight, June 30th. That's a holdover from a test that we did a long time ago where we found out that if for year-end fundraising, if we said, give a gift by midnight, December 31st, that phrase raised more money than give a gift by December 31st. So there's something magical about making that deadline super specific that we're applying that here too. So say, if you can, give a gift by midnight, June 30. Generally speaking, that's not going to turbocharge your giving or double anything, but I would do that over give a gift by June 30.
These little ingredients, these little steps that make the fundraising content better and really ultimately raises more money. Stephen, we have a couple of questions around email, so let's go there.
Love it.
One has to do with images. How important are images in email appeals?
In these appeals, not at all too counterproductive. This email will do best if it feels like a personal email from the executive director with as little formatting as possible. It's a great question. I'm glad this person asked this question because most of the time, most nonprofits are going to want to send this out in their template that has 14 other things and a huge header image and all the stuff. The more stripped down, the more urgent this feels, the better it'll do. I mean, this would be great if you could do a red headline in big text across the top and then boom, the letter. So no images, especially no happy images. Because remember, your donor is not reading, she's scanning. And if she's looking really fast and sees a happy person, it looks like everything is fine. It looks like you don't need a gift today, and delete.
Yeah, we send happy pictures when we report, when we tell a completed story, which
That's
is
right.
not the topic of this call. But just know that there is a time in your fundraising communications where the happy story is told,
yeah.
and the before and after is also told.
Yeah, and the really quick thing that we found in testing there, everybody, is that when you're asking for money, don't send happy pictures. When you are reporting, which generally happens in your newsletter, in one-to-one major donor meetings, your annual report, that's where you share the photos of smiling, happy people. But don't have if you have happy people, when you're asking for money, you're raising less money than you could be. Period.
That's good.
Okay.
Happy people, happy whales, clean water. Like you want the problem to be obviously presented.
Yeah, that's right. If you're a charity that does clean water. In your appeal letters, you don't want to have lots of pictures of crystal clear water being drank by people. You want pictures of dirty water to reinforce the message that there's a problem that needs to be solved today.
Give the donor a problem solved. That's a good one. The other is this person is wondering or questioning, they get opt-outs when they send these emails. Should they be concerned by people opting out of their email communications?
No. So here's the thing. This is complex, but the main reason for the existence of your email list is fundraising and donor communications. And if the donors don't like fundraising, then you don't need for them to be on your list. This is sort of harsh, and it's 100% true. But if they're on your list and they don't like to be asked for money occasionally, you don't need them on your list because chances are they're never going to become donors. So it is absolutely okay to get some opt-outs. You want to be getting some opt-outs. And so here's my experience, everybody. You want to regularly be getting a small trickle of opt-outs. And that trickle gets a little bit larger. And we're not talking a lot here. It's usually like 5 or 7. A larger trickle at year end or fiscal year end when you're sending a lot of fundraising emails. But what that is people saying, you know what? It turns out I'm not going to be a donor here. I'm just going to get off this list. And that's fine. That's like, think about your email list like a cross-country team. You have to go on long runs every once in a while or you're never going to be in shape. Some people don't like long runs and will drop off the team. Great. They'll go be on some other team, but you want your people to be in shape, to be asked every once in a while. And what that means is some people will drop off the team, and that's fine.
Yep. Every nonprofit has a leaky bucket, we're going to lose some of our donors, but as long as you're raising more money, your net revenue is going in the right direction, and the majority of the people you're communicating with are giving, then you're in a good spot.
Yeah, because the goal here, this is, I think, the best way to encapsulate. As a nonprofit, your goal is to build a responsive email list, not a large email list. I hope that makes sense. You're training your list to be responsive. You're not. You shouldn't be judged on the size of the list.
No, that's good.
Okay.
Stephen, this has been a really fruitful call, so thank you for taking us through how to do this.
Yep.
You know, I want to point out that if the folks listening do this and do it well and it works, then you can basically do the same thing again next year. You can save your letter. You can save your emails. Save the new copy you put on your giving page and use the exact same letter and email next year. We can repeat this.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, you literally can use the exact same letter next year and emails. We usually take them out, freshen them up a little bit, try to make them a little bit better. But these are things that you can repeat. Like I said, I'm a fan of making a few little changes, but it's totally okay to use the exact same stuff. There's a famous charity in New York that's used the exact same year-end letter 23 years in a row. And I want to say this one more time. There are some people on your board and staff who are uncomfortable with this message that we're talking about today. They may be uncomfortable with this idea of repeating last year's letter that worked. But we need to sort of get through, we need to really own the idea that this message is not for your board and staff. It's for your donors. And then just to get in the math, maybe half your donors are going to open the letter. Probably less than a third of your donors are going to open each of the emails. So you need to do this more than just one time if you want a good chance for more of your donors to get the message. So just remember those two things. Repetition, really, really helpful. And number two, the message is not for internal audiences. It's for external audiences. And external audiences love your charity. They love a simple problem with an urgent deadline. That's the type of thing that will cause them to take action.
That's a good summary, Stephen. Thanks for that. You know, last note here before we get to our final questions. Everyone, we're going to send you a recording of this call so you can listen to it again and share it with someone else on your team. In fact, share it with other fundraisers. We want you to pass this along to folks that you know will have benefit from understanding how to raise money this fiscal year end. So this has been really fruitful. Stephen, we have a question in the email inbox regarding majors. The person says, hey, we've done a lot of talking about direct mail, email, kind of the mass donor approach. Where does the major donor fit into this? And at the very beginning of the call, I mentioned the fact that your major donor should fit into this. There are some majors that would love to give you a second gift. I guess my thought here is that assumes you're in relationship with them and that you've been communicating with them, so that they know what's happening in the organization. So when you call on them and when you present this problem of a fundraising shortfall or a fiscal year-end shortfall, they are ready to receive the ask. They're ready to receive the appeal. The question I always ask is, how well have you thanked them recently if they've given you a gift? How well have they been reported to? How recently have you contacted them? If it's been a while for a donor, let's say a donor gave you a gift in December and you haven't talked to them since, you haven't written them a thank you note or made a phone call, you probably need to, you should close the loop with them before you make the next appeal. But my hope is that you are in constant contact with your majors, or your CEO is, or other people on your major gift team are in constant contact with your major donors, so that when problems like this come up, you can call them and they'll be responsive.
Yeah, that's right. And in terms of the mail and email select, I would default to sending this to everybody and then have the major gift officer or officers or team pull out the people that they know shouldn't get it. In other words, default to sending it to everybody, but only deselect the people you know shouldn't get it.
Yep.
But there, and then one other tactic you can use is that some people for their major donors will take the regular letter or email and forward it to their major donor with a nice note at the top saying, hey, this is going on, wanted you to know about it. If you'd like to participate, if you'd like to help, get in touch.
Yeah.
That's a nice way to take this mass message and make it personal.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, Stephen, this has been a fruitful call. I mean, that's the end of our questions. We want to just really thank you. I mean, I know you appreciate everyone on the call, and so do I. Thanks for being a fundraiser. Thank you for listening in and wanting to improve your fiscal year-end fundraising. Stephen and I truly believe that if you apply what you learned today, your fundraising confidence will grow and you will raise more money. You play an important role in making the world a better place. And so on behalf of myself and Stephen, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. And we really do encourage you to do fiscal year-end fundraising. This is a great, great way to have another giving opportunity for your donors throughout the year. Even if it's a little bit uncomfortable at first, there are lots of organizations who do this every year. There are thousands of organizations who do it every year and have a shortfall every year. They will even maneuver their budgets around to have a shortfall in their last month of the year. we could get into the ethics of that or not, but the main thing is this works. I would say it works like crazy. It also provides another giving opportunity for your donors for many small nonprofits, which is really helpful to help you avoid the summer slump. So lots of really good positive things happening from doing fiscal year and fundraising. So couldn't encourage you to do it more. Hopefully we've given you exactly what you need to run your campaign this year. And then the final thing I'll say is get in touch. Let us know how it went. Even feel free to send me something and let me take a look at it. We want you to be doing more good. We want you to be raising more money and helping more people. So that's open. My email address is stephen@betterfundraising.com. That's S-T-E-V-E-N, so with a V, not a P-H. But get in touch. We would love for you to be raising more money.
Yeah, so thank you. Thanks for making the world a better place and for playing the role that you do. We believe in you, and hopefully you leave this call with more confidence towards raising money in fiscal year end.
Yep, thanks very much.
Take care.